Hello, everyone, and thanks for joining us again this week. I'm Jenna, and you are listening to Surfacing the Meaning in the Story, a podcast produced by the Mental Health Association of Westchester. And as always, I'm joined by Dustin, our producer.
Hey, Jenna. Glad to have you back in the driver's seat this episode.
Yeah, you did a great job last week, Dustin.
Thank you.
Good to have a partner on this, that's for sure. So we are absolutely flying through season one, and it's hard to believe there's only a few episodes left. But please let us know what you think and leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. We love hearing from you. So today we are joined by Ben Zupnik, and he shares his story with us that I know will be relatable to so many people. He talks about his experience with anxiety and depression during his life and his attempts to respond to those episodes and what he's learned along the way. The way he shares about adding more and more tools to his toolbox is something that I think we can all take something away from. What did you think, Dustin?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I have my tool belt full of things that I like to go to when I need them. And like he says in the episode, it's not about not ever having it come up again, but being better equipped to deal with it when it does come up.
Yeah, exactly. And I really appreciate his efforts to take away some of the stigma attached to seeking mental health treatment and how he has kind of made that his mission and something that he advocates for. So if you find yourself considering seeking help, head on over to the podcast description for some links to resources, and let's get into it. Well, hi, welcome, Ben.
Hi, thanks for having me today.
Yeah, absolutely. We're excited to talk with you today. So why don't you start by just kind of sharing with us a little bit about who you are and kind of what you want to talk to us about today?
Sure, thanks. My name's Ben Zupnik. I'm a native of Westchester. I'm from New Rochelle originally. Grew up through the New Rochelle School District. So I know Westchester well. I lived there until I went to undergrad at Binghamton in upstate New York. And then I spent the last couple of years in DC before moving home. So a New York native and happy to be back. A little bit about myself. I mean, I like sports a lot, big Giants and Yankees fan.
Dustin is cheering right now. Me, not so much.
I'm an economist with the Bureau of Labor Statistics. We put out a lot of stuff like unemployment rates and inflation measures and stuff like that. So I like to stay active, play intramural sports, although I haven't really been able to get that started back up since, or social sports, I guess maybe is what you call it at this age. Mm-hmm. I haven't been able to get that started back up because the world shut down pretty much as soon as I got settled back in. But beyond all the crazy stuff that I'm going to tell you about myself today, I say that, you know, jokingly, of course, that term maybe might trigger some people and others, but I like to be self-deprecating. But beyond, you know, what I tell you today, I think on the surface, you know, I come off as a pretty normal guy with, you know, some regular, you know, interests and hobbies. And, you know, certainly throughout different points in my life, I think I've come across to different people in different ways, ways, I guess, to say that maybe most people that aren't so familiar with certain mental health issues might, you know, kind of not identify if they just knew me, you know, the things that on the surface, you know, maybe they would think, you know, doesn't correspond so much to people that have gone through some things. So I guess I'll start talking about that a little bit.
Sure.
I've personally, you know, struggled with, it felt like probably in earlier on in my life, probably starting in my middle school probably beginning of high school, really, what felt like, you know, really strong anxiety. And it's hard to say, you know, at that stage in life, because I think everyone's got anxiety to a certain extent. So, you know,
as a teenager,
yes, teenage angst, it's a thing. So, So, you know, it's hard to say, you know, what's, you know, quote, regular teenage angst versus, you know, what might start to, you know, be a troubling sign. And, mm-hmm. and you kind of never really know, maybe. I mean, maybe professionals could tell, but it's the kind of thing that, you know, sometimes gets worked out over time. And there was clearly some issues that I wasn't dealing with. And ultimately, you know, I have for probably the last, I'd say I've undergone, you know, various depressive episodes of various severity pretty much throughout my adult life. And I think, you know, the first one when I really, when it was really just too much, was probably, you know, probably before my senior year of undergraduate in college. And I felt like I couldn't go back to school. And I think a lot of that had to do with, I was afraid of what was on the other side of graduation. I think that's, you know, probably mm-hmm. a pretty common, you know, that the unknown kind of, life is on a pretty standard trajectory if you're lucky enough to be able to go to college, and then, you know, what happens afterwards, and, you know, all sorts of pressures I put on myself, you know, pressures that I perceived from society. So that was the first time. And then, yeah, I mean, it's been, you know, kind of a cyclical thing for me. It seems like every couple of years it kind of rears its ugly head, but I think I'm learning ways to deal with it that hopefully make, you know, if there are any future iterations of it, you know, less severe and less long in time. But yeah, I mean, I, you know, growing up kind of, you know, maybe some of those ways that I knew that it was a little bit more than just anxiety. You know, I mean, there were things about myself that I didn't like. I compared my, I mean, again, these, it's all on a scale. So like, when does it become a problem? You know, if you're honest with yourself, when it becomes a problem, which I wasn't always mm-hmm. when I was younger. So, yeah, I mean, I compared myself a lot to other people and not always in a very positive light. I probably discounted a lot of the positive things about myself and tried to make myself fit in. I you know, used alcohol as an escape in social settings a lot. And again, you know, a lot of teenagers do this and it, you know, where there's no really, you know, line of like, so, okay, well now it's a problem. But ultimately, you know, it I learned it to be a problem. Eventually I couldn't go on and I needed help. And thankfully I had the resources to kind of take that time off and get that help. Mm-hmm. I'm here today to talk about my experiences and because one, it helps me and two, I think it could help other people who are probably, you know, these aren't uncommon things. The more I open up about it, the more I talk about it, the more other people seem to open up and talk to me about
That's
it.
Right.
You know, maybe they, not in a clinical sense, but you know, just like tell me about times in life they struggled, and it's really, you know, it creates this nice virtuous cycle where it helps me and it helps other people and it helps normalize things and helps, you know, reduce the stigma. You often hear about the mental health stigma, and that's
a big thing. Connection.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
No, you're 100% right. I really appreciate that you are so willing, and not just willing, but excited and eager to share what you've been through and how you've gone through it so that you can help other people. And I like that you also talk about how it helps you too, because I believe that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It wasn't always a thing I was comfortable talking about, obviously. And over time I found that, you know, being embarrassed or ashamed of it, you know, really just kind of adds another weight on top of that weight that's already on your shoulders from depression. So it just makes it that much harder to get yourself out of it. So yeah, I'm happy that over time I've learned to talk about it because it wasn't always that way. And you know, not to say that everybody, you know, needs to be open and honest to talk about it. I don't think that's necessarily or at least publicly, I don't think that's a necessary precondition for addressing this. That's something that I came to based on, you know, my life and my decisions that I've made, that I decided that I wanted to do this. And hopefully this is the start of getting more involved in that area for me. But I do think it's important to be honest with yourself. I mean, that's I do think is an important part of, and honest with, you know, a doctor, hopefully that you're able to see that'll help you work through these issues because, yeah, that's the level of honesty that I would say, in my non-expert opinion, is mm-hmm. is is necessary for addressing these issues. So I don't want anyone to think like, oh, you know, I got, look at this, I have to be all out in public and talking about it. No, of course not. That's a personal choice.
Mm-hmm. It could be just sharing and creating that narrative within a journal, very personal way, or finding one or two people that you really trust that you can share with. And yeah, so that's helpful, a helpful distinction to make. So where do you think some of that initial sort of, you know, like you talked about the stigma, some of your beliefs about what it meant to have anxiety or what it meant to have depression, and how did those influence the way you approached dealing with it initially?
Yeah. I mean, you know, growing up, you know, you want to kind of be some people, you know, they want to be the tough guy. And I went to New Rochelle High School, and it was a great experience, a very interesting, unique, diverse place. But there's a lot of room to fall through the cracks. And, you know, sometimes how I perceive life, you know, you see, you know, the kind of cooler, tougher guys, you know, getting the girls and the more intellectual or people, you know, maybe get picked on a little bit. And you know, I'm a smart person. I'm an economist now, but I discounted these strengths in my life when I was younger. And you know, I kind of tried to be something I wasn't. And, you know, just because that's what I thought people wanted, and that's what I thought would be rewarded and provide the things that I thought I wanted in life. But, you know, it was insecurity and that layer, that kind of identity that I wanted to present, and the things that the strengths that I, which were probably at odds with the strengths that I really had. And then the strengths that I really had discounting and kind of wanting to hide them, because I saw them as, you know, things that, you know, people get made fun of for. And I mean, it's not, I didn't make this up out of nowhere. You know, there are some people that will do that to you in life. You know, I don't want to, mm-hmm. you know, sugarcoat it or anything like that, but really, it made I was like, all right, you know, whatever, you know, drinking's cool. So it's like, this isn't a problem. This is something that's cool. And people like me when I'm going out and doing all these stupid things and making a fool out of myself. So it was like, okay, like I could try to be this person and I could do this stuff. And, you know, people are telling me it's, you know, maybe people in my life might've told me it was damaging, but, you know, they don't know what they're talking about. And it's just normal. You know, it's normal that I binge drink like this. It's like, well, probably not. You know, I mean, some people drink and they drink and they have fun and it's fun even, you know, at a younger age. And of course there's health issues with that as well. But, you know, it's like, do you have a couple drinks with your friends to feel good, or are you binge drinking so you don't remember what happens and you could mm-hmm. make an ass out of yourself and kind of escape? So that's how I dealt with it. I never, you know, gave room. I never would have, you know, I had a loving family who I could have talked to about anything. And, you know, I had a good relationship with the school psychologist or social worker at New Rochelle High School. So I had a lot of good friends that I could have talked to about it that were pretty, you know, pretty open. Mm-hmm. In retrospect, at least we're open to hearing about that sort of thing, at least later in life when I was able to share it. But at the time, it never even seemed like an option. I was like, I got to push this down, power mm-hmm. through it, you know, drink my way through it. And then, you know, eventually I'll be an adult and, you know, like life will kind of fall into place. It never even crossed my mind that it was an option. And it's incredible because, you know, this is someone who came from a loving household and had all these financial resources. So that's kind of at the base of why I want to speak out so much, because I had I had every opportunity possible to get the help that I needed. And I still didn't do it. So it's that idea of the stigma, like, yeah, you know, I mean, and then I think like, oh my God, like all the, you know, people that have, you know, other impediments to care. I mean, the financial cost mm-hmm. or just, you know, not having, you know, the emotional support available within their family. And, you know, so just thinking of like, if it could happen to me, then it could happen to anyone. And really, you know, being aware of how much, you know, of how it could happen to anyone. And that's why I've decided to open up more about it, because.
Yeah. So you kind of talked about your senior year of college kind of being your turning point where you realized, okay, I got to do something different here. Things aren't just falling into place the way that I imagined they would. And now I have to kind of figure out what I'm going to do. So tell us about that time and what that process was like for you of coming to that realization.
Yeah, it was terrifying. I mean, I knew I was good in school. You know, I had pretty good GPA. I had some internships, you know, stuff that like I got set up with through my network, and none of it was really exciting for me. And I didn't know what I wanted to do, and I was terrified, and I was basically, you know, paralyzed into inaction. To the extent where like I enrolled in classes, and I found an apartment with some friends, and I was, you know, ready to, it was actually, I really only had to go back for one final semester. My college career is a little disjointed. So I had one semester left. It was, you know, my 4.5 year point or whatever. So it was an extra semester anyway. And, you know, part of that was probably me, you know, working through some issues. That was at least part of it that kind of made it take a little bit longer than that anyway. But yeah, and the way it played out for me, and again, you know, part of this is privilege, is that I just couldn't do it. Like I couldn't face it. I couldn't face the world. I couldn't leave. I couldn't go, you know, I was just so scared, and I stayed home. Not my finest moment, and not the only time that this has happened to me, but yeah, I couldn't face the world. I couldn't face myself. And I was lucky in a way to be able to take that time off, and, you know, and that's the first time that I seek professional care and any sort of medication to help. But the only reason I got to there, it wasn't like, you know, I'm going to be more accepting of myself. That's much later on down the line, and we'll talk about that, I'm sure, throughout the course of this. But mm-hmm. but it wasn't that. It was just like literally like I have no other option.
It didn't see it. Yeah. And it was interesting. You know, one of the things you said was it wasn't my finest moment, but I actually think that there was a piece of you in that moment that knew exactly what you needed and did that. So maybe it wasn't as conscious as maybe it became later on, which, yeah, we definitely want to hear about. But you knew that there was something that needed to change. And so you made that choice, you did it, and you sought help at that time also. So I see that as actually a fine moment.
Just to hop in really quick, because my favorite part of people share is like being able to identify with things that they say. In my senior year of college, was really like that for me as well. As I didn't know what I wanted to do. I was scared to become an adult. I had done college because that's what you were supposed to do. So I always had someone telling me what to do. And then all of a sudden, here's the end of college coming up, and I don't know what I want to do. I have no idea what I'm going to do. You know, you say it wasn't your finest moment. You got professional help. I went in the complete opposite direction, and, you know, really dove deep into drugs and alcohol, which kind of took me through, you know, my entire 20s. That took me down to pretty low levels. So you're looking at it from a different perspective. You know, getting help can be thought of as a good moment in your life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know what? I appreciate you guys saying that. And I do believe it. And I agree with you there. Yeah. I mean, I guess, you know, looking back, I wish I'd, you know, walked head held high into the doctor's office and said, yeah, this is the first day of the rest of my life, but maybe that's not so realistic.
That's not often what it looks like.
No, it's not. But I did get care. And again, you know, I mean, I'm lucky. You know, one thing I've found in life is that like how much happenstance matters, and how much, you know, support network matters. And yeah, I mean, you know, I was pushed lightly, and then maybe eventually not so lightly into care. So I mean, it's like, mm-hmm. you know, I just look at all these like different like little things in life that could have been different. You know, background could have been different, family support could have been different, and then
yeah.
It's just like little ways that like life could have twisted and turned. So again, I had, not only did I not have impediments to care, I had people pushing me emotionally and financially towards it. And it still took me till I got to the breaking point, until I accepted that, okay, like I have to do this.
All right. So tell us what happened next after that first moment.
what happened next? Yeah. I mean, I started talking to the doctor, and we, you know, we talked through, you know, insecurities that I'd had for a long time, that I, you know, just kind of thought were normal part of growing up, and you know, difficult ways of or damaging ways that I viewed myself. And I started opening up to some closer friends a little bit, just to the extent of like, you know, like I'm not pushing you away. It's not that I don't want to be friends with you. Like, this is just something that I'm going through, and it's hard for me. So I started to open up a little bit to people, and especially my older brother. He's like really been a great support. So is my sister and family, but you know, really he's, you know, I mean, who doesn't look up to their older brother if they're lucky enough to have one. So, or older siblings. So I started to open up a little bit, and you know, but in retrospect, and we'll kind of get to like the ebbs and flows. I mean, I was 20 then, and you know, maybe by the time I got to, you know, maybe 31, I think I really turned over a leaf, and we'll get there. There's a lot in between, of course. But you know, I even at that point, you know, I started to get care, but I looked at it as a like oh, I want to like solve this and get better and put it behind me. So I still, I had to admit it to some people, the people closest to me in life, and the friends I didn't want to lose because I was, you know, canceling plans with them and stuff and not behaving with them. But even when I started getting care, I never would have been public about it, and I was still looking at it as a thing that, you know, let me figure out how to like put this behind me, sort of thing. And as I've progressed through life, and I'm sure, you know, it's no surprise to you guys that you know, work in this advocacy field, that's not a great way to view it if you want to grow from it and make it less of an acute issue in your life. So I started to get the care, and I got care, and I started with a little bit of medication help. I was never, you know, heavily medicated, but, you know, a little bit of like Zoloft or whatever it was. And that was enough to kind of get me out of my funk and at least able to, you know, accept what was happening and accept, okay, like you're going to have to continue on in life. So it was able to get me back into school and graduating. And then I, you know, continued to punt my future by going to graduate school. So, but at least I was like, so I was still kind of on this, you know, the path. I still wasn't ready to get started yet, but at least now
I know, because grad school is so easy, right?
So easy. At least at this point in my life, I was able to kind of say, okay, like, you don't have to be this tough guy so much anymore, and you can embrace that academic side. So I was able to a little bit better identify my strengths and what wasn't my strengths, and use those to my advantage. So I was able to go to graduate school, and I love learning, and, you know, maybe I'm always trying to learn, whether it's in a school setting or not. So that's kind of a life long journey for me, but yeah. And I went to graduate school, and it was a really great time in my life. It was the classes were in the evening. I had a great friend who just had gotten back from the Marines, and he was in the school too. So we would just hang out, and we'd go to the gym during the day. And I, you know, it's like, I was like living like this almost like retiree life of like going to the gym. And like, I mean, I didn't have much of an income, and I was living at home, but I was in a good relationship, and I had a ton of free time, and I was learning interesting things. And like, so I wasn't, you know, I didn't have a lot of financial freedom, but I didn't really need it. I found this like nice little comfort zone, and that, you know, sustained me. And, you know, again, I said, I love learning. So life seemed to have found a nice equilibrium there. But then I graduated from graduate school, because, you know, that does happen eventually. I was a little bit more upbeat about it. I was like, okay, I got these graduate degrees, I'm looking good to potential employers. But it was, you know, 2011 or so. So the Great Recession was still kind of in the, you know, that once in a lifetime recession that my generation has had to deal with two of now. Yeah, so it was still difficult finding work. And I knew, you know, I went away for undergraduate. Like, I knew that I wanted to stay in the New York area. This is where my family was and my friend network was. But I couldn't find the job. I wanted to go into the nonprofit or government sector, just as, you know, some sort of mission-driven job. And I couldn't find that in New York. So I got a job offer after, you know, it's probably about 6 months after graduation of like, applying and, you know, certainly starting to wear on me. And I got a job offer in DC, and I didn't, Washington DC, and I didn't really want to take it, but I was convinced that it was the right thing to do. And, you know, hard to say in life takes a lot of interesting twists and turns, and you never know how things will go otherwise. But one thing I can say about it, and I, you know, maybe a more general lesson, is that I didn't trust my gut on it. And that had a lot of real long-term implications. I didn't want to do it. I was convinced to do it. And it was really emblematic of this bigger issue of like me not wanting to be an adult, me not wanting to take responsibility for myself. So I was like, okay, well, you know, I'll let someone else make that decision for me. And then I can be mad at them if things don't work out well. And that's, you know, coming of age, maybe I'm still doing it in a lot of ways. But yeah, so I didn't really take full ownership of it. And I mean, the job wasn't exactly what I thought it would be. I mean, I should have known. I was just excited to have a job at that point. The job wasn't exactly what I wanted it to be. So a little disillusioned by that. It was tough to get settled into a new place for me. And I make good friends and deep friends, but not necessarily quick friends. So there's a little bit of
it's a difference. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I still do. I'm lucky. I have a lot of lifelong friends from, you know, elementary, middle schools, and I'm a very loyal person, but sometimes that in a way makes it like a little harder to make new connections.
Yeah.
But I ended up with a great friend group down in DC, and they're people that I still really do care of, you know, despite myself and despite, you know, my kind of one foot out the door mentality of like, oh, well, I'll move back up to New York eventually. Like I ended up staying in DC for a lot longer than I thought and made some really great connections down there. But, the job wasn't the perfect job for me, and the relationship couldn't handle the long distance aspect of it. And it was really my first serious relationship. And that really crushed me. I mean, I was down in DC and I'm like, oh, I'm working this job I don't love. And it's cost me this thing that I think I do love. And that really basically threw me back down into this, probably my second great depression. I don't know. Great depression. My second great depression. It was really tough. And you know, this time I probably in some ways for the better, but in some ways for the harder, you know, I wasn't near my support network. I couldn't just stay at home because I had a job now and I was an adult and I had bills to pay. So I kind of had to keep going, but again, I had to keep going, but like I was afraid to tell people. I didn't share it with my employers, and you know they had all these services at my job that I could have taken advantage of. I made it so much harder on myself than I had to, basically, kind of story of my life. I made it so much harder than I had to, and it was really just because I was afraid. I was afraid of what other people thought. And I mean, I work for the government, like I understand, and you know, for some people that work in, you know, really cutthroat private sector type jobs, like, even though, you know, there are certain legal protections, whatever, like Americans with Disabilities Act and things like that. But, you know, there's other ways that certain types of jobs can make it uncomfortable for people still, even in this more understanding environment. Hopefully now with COVID, the world's becoming even more understanding. I definitely think that's the general direction we're going in with mental health issues. And I think COVID has accelerated that a bit, but sure. I get it. There's still people that aren't comfortable. They haven't reconciled it with themselves. So it's hard to think like, I'm going to tell these people and, you know, it could have an adverse impact on my social relationships and my career and everything. So again, I didn't have to worry about that so much. Like, you know, the government's never, I mean, the federal government, you know, of all people, they're going to play by the federal rules. Like, they're not going to fire you if you tell them that you're having these issues and if you use the services that are available to you. And still, you know, I mean, growing up, I had all the resources and I was just, the stigma stopped me from accessing them. And then again, even after going through that first big depressive episode, I still didn't learn the lesson well enough because, you know, I mean, I learned some lessons, but clearly not well enough, because then, you know, it occurs again. And again, same thing. I had everything lined up for me as easily as it could have been to access care. And I still didn't do it. And yeah, you know, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. I mean, again, not to say that I'm ashamed. I was ashamed of it, but ideally I would have learned from that first incident, but I didn't. And it made it a lot harder again. And that funk really persisted on and off for you know, maybe a year and a half, 2 years, until I started seeing a doctor again. I was off the medication. I was reluctant to get back on medication, but I started seeing a doctor again. And even that, because the first depressive episode was so stark and difficult for me, like, I think part of it was that I was in denial to myself that this could be happening again. Cause like, oh God, if this happens again, like I barely made it out that first time. Like I can't deal with it. What does it mean? So I was definitely in denial about it, but eventually I couldn't be. So I started seeing a doctor again, and it helped. I mean, this is a different doctor, but you know, similar style than the first one that I had. And yeah, and it helped. He helped me kind of, you know, understand some of these things that, you know, like I was talking about, you know, deferring that that decision to come to DC to other people and what that meant, and kind of, you know, as doctors tend to do, untethering stuff from the past to help you kind of understand the decisions you make and how they impact you, and you know, the patterns, and sometimes the not so beneficial patterns in the way you think. So that helped. I mean, I've always been experienced this in my adult life, been a proponent of you know, the psychotherapy piece of it. I think it's very important.
Yeah, it sounds like you learned a lot through that process about yourself.
Absolutely, absolutely. I've learned a ton through that process myself. But still, you know, that funk, it came and went in waves. But I knew I wanted to get back to New York, and I couldn't, and that seemed like a big obstacle to my happiness. So eventually I did something that I would never do as a risk averse person, that I quit my job and decided to travel the world for a while. And
Wow.
And that was really cool and very out of my normal comfort zone thing to do. I've got big into yoga when I moved to DC. It's great exercise. It's very beneficial for mental health. That was the start of my journey. I knew I wanted to get back to New York, and I didn't know how to do it. And I knew I didn't love the job that I had at the time. I mean, actually, I still work for the same organization. So I should say, you know, I do like the people a lot. It was just that specific role I had outgrown.
good save.
I was just like, you know what, like there's not much keep me here except for my fear. So let me just do this thing. And it started off with a yoga teacher training in India. And then it was a lot of solo traveling through Europe, which over the course of 6 weeks, it was a little microcosm of life. It had its joys and it had its difficulties as mm-hmm. well. It wasn't a resort vacation. It wasn't a big party with friends, but there were a lot of cool people I met along the way, and hostels and stuff, and a great experience.
Sounds like a movie. Like, I didn't know people really did this.
yeah. I eat, pray, loved my way. Through India. Well, not through India, but starting in India and through Europe. Yeah, it was really an incredible experience. But when I got back, and I moved to New York, you know, I kind of got all the things I wished for. And this is almost like a rehash now that I think about it this way, of like me graduating from, or about to be graduating from undergrad. Like, now I'm back in New York. Now I don't really know what I'm going to do. I didn't realize that I had the job maybe quite as lined up as I thought I had. So I was worried about my career and just all this uncertainty about what to do next. And it threw me back into a deep funk. And that was arguably the hardest one for me to deal with, because I was like, okay, you know, now I'm 30. Now I've started my career. You know, I'm supposed to be further along than this, you know, career wise, and also just maturity wise. It felt like it was something that I should have been past. I was really ashamed of it. You know, I mean, I got everything I wanted. I got back to New York. I got to go on this great journey. Like, how am I still feeling this way? And that was really tough. And again, I cut off friends. I, you know, barely saw anyone when I was so excited to move back and see all my friends that I had on a regular basis. You know, we'd stayed in touch and I'd come and visit somewhat regularly, but like, oh, now these people are here. And look at this, I actually have free time in between jobs. Like, let me take advantage of this and go hang out with them all the time. Right. No, wrong. I was so just embarrassed and ashamed of where I was in life, that I cut people off again. And that was, you know, really like the third big depressive episode that I had. And I was, again, even with all my experience, had to be pushed back into therapy. Glad I did. I started off talking with a doctor who's actually does some work with MHA as well. And he is also big into kind of the mindfulness aspect of mental health treatment, which I had never gotten into. I mean, you know, I'm a yogi, so to say. I like yoga a lot. I've started to embrace meditation a little bit more this past year, and some aspects of Buddhism as well. So I was open to all that. I've been doing yoga for years, but I thought of all that nice, you know, love yourself and be understanding and be accepting. Like, I thought of them as like nice sayings and things to like apply to other people. Like I was always very good at applying mm-hmm. that sort of stuff to other people. Like, oh,
well, that's much easier to do.
Yes. It's much easier to do. to apply it to myself was difficult. And it involved unwinding a lot of deep held beliefs of, you know, you gotta be tough and tough love. That's how you grow. And maybe to some extent, but I'm always naturally very hard on myself. So the lesson for me, the thing that I had to do was really internalize all these lessons of, you know, be more accepting, unconditional self-love. This is what you need. This is what you've been missing. You've done a great job in therapy of being honest with doctors, of uncovering past traumas, past issues, understanding yourself. But that was kind of like half the job. Like I uncovered all this stuff, but then like, but I didn't, but maybe it was just stuff for me to be hard on myself. I didn't know how to.
Well, right. It's just knowledge until you figure out how to apply it and make it so that it actually changes something that needs to change.
Yeah. And it really wasn't until, you know, this third stint with a third doctor who incorporated these things that, you know, a younger version of myself might've thought like, oh, that's silly. That's not what therapy is supposed to be. Like, this is too wishy-washy. How could this help? Like, no, we need to talk about my parents more, and we need to talk about high school more. And like, but no, I did that. I did that at nauseam. I did it at length to the point where I'd uncovered what there was to uncover. To the extent that it's ever possible to get to the bottom of it, I did. But there's a piece missing, and I'm really so grateful and that I was able to find a doctor that, you know, helped me start to, you know, rewire my thought process and my relationship with myself. Because, you know, if I just kept on going, if I'd gone to another doctor who wanted to do deep dive in my past, you know, maybe I wouldn't have, you know, I wouldn't be at the point where I am today of being, you know, willing to be open and talking with it and accepting of it and understanding of it. And, it's really been transformative. I mean, this has been such a difficult year for everyone.
Yeah, that's for sure.
And it's been a stress test if there ever was one. And then recently, you know, I had a difficult thing happen with my family, so we had to delay this. And just all these stress tests and this idea of, you know, self-acceptance and unconditional self-love and, you know, breathing and meditation and exercise and healthy eating, this holistic approach to mental health, not just talking about your past. That's an important part of it too. Medication.
Has that helped you during this time?
What's that?
And I mean, you were talking about how sometimes you can hear these messages, but if you don't internalize them, and so here was your opportunity to really put them to the test. How did that work?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, just the way that, I mean, that I think that's been the big difference this past 2 years really. And just the way the timing worked out, like I started to learn those lessons. This would have been summer of 2019. So I, you know, maybe say, you know, it took me, you know, maybe 6 months to really, you know, start to believe them, internalize them, put them into practice, see the benefits from them. So mm-hmm. it just happened to be that the way the timing worked out, that at the point where like I was on solid ground with all this stuff is like when stuff started to get crazy and start shutting down. So, I mean, it's of course been tough. I mean, this year has been at best inconvenient and unfun and at worst tragic for a lot of people for a lot of reasons. But I think, you know, using these tools has made all the difference. I really do. It's hard to say and hard to decouple things, but I do really think that even if I'd, you know, come back and been able to get myself out of my funk to the point of like being a functioning person, if I hadn't done that in a way that really challenged a lot of negative ways of thinking about myself. If I hadn't done it in this exactly the way that I did do it, I don't think the foundation would have been as strong, and it would have been a lot harder for me this year. So it's, I mean, mm-hmm. if there's ever been a stress test, this was it. And it really, like, I'm full in. I mean, I was already like, you know, kind of predisposed to all the yoga, Buddhism, mindfulness type stuff, because I practiced yoga and I thought it sounded nice, but applying those lessons actually myself and really believing them has been transformational. Really, there's no other word for it. And you don't, I don't want to look in the future. I do understand there's a physiological component to depression as well, and it could be cyclical. So I don't want to make bold proclamations of the end of history for myself, and it's going to be smooth sailing from here on out. But I really do believe that with these lessons that I've learned, and they're complementary. I think that the deep dive into the past is important too. I think you kind of need mm-hmm. both, but I'd already done that. So I already had that piece of it. So this was the missing piece. And I right. think having both of those pieces has really, you know, it's given me the tools, as I was talking about earlier on, to depression does come up again, and that it will not be as intense, and that it'll not last as long, and that I'll be able to kind of dig myself out a little bit more easily. And I truly do believe that. And I think that the mindfulness piece is a very important piece of it.
I have this image of you just creating this toolbox, right? And you kind of had the basics in there. You had your hammer and nails, maybe like a screwdriver. And then each time you're just adding more and more to it. And now you're able to do so much more with it. So I don't know why I'm thinking of that, but you're just adding to your toolbox every time. So when something happens, you're more prepared than you were the last time.
Yes, I like that, because I like that. And I think I have a pretty much a full toolbox now to deal with these things. But yeah, that's a great way of looking at it, because I needed those tools I learned earlier in life. Mm-hmm. I don't want right. to dismiss them and, you know, tell people, you know, okay, just meditate and, you know, find a good guru or something. Like, I don't think that that's necessarily sufficient for people that are going through and have had, you know, clinical depression. I do think you need both. You need all those tools. Mm-hmm. And you need to be able to learn to identify, you know, the fallacies of your past life or the ways that, you know, certain interactions have colored your the way you perceive the world and the way you interact with people. So yes, you need the toolbox, and you need all those tools.
Right. And everybody's looks a little bit different, right? So
yes.
But the point is, you don't say, oh, well, I tried these and they didn't work, so now I give up. This doesn't work. It's okay. Add something else to the mix, and then add something else until you find that right combination. So that's encouraging. So I would love to hear, I know that, we always like to ask people about some kind of song or poem or quote or scripture or whatever it might be that kind of helps you to bring meaning to what you've been through and make sense of where you're going. So I'd love to hear what you came up with.
Sure. I'm kind of thinking between two of them, but I really like that that Bill Withers song, Lean On Me. That mm-hmm. that's just one of those songs that every time it comes on, it just, without fail, no matter what my day is like or what's going on, it just puts a smile on my face, and it makes me grateful for what I have, and it makes me want to help other people too. And it's a beautiful song, and it's a beautiful message. You know, we all need somebody to lean on, you know, sometimes in our lives. So it's a beautiful message. And there's also a verse in the song where I'm probably going to butcher it, but he basically says, you know, you have to you have to let people know what you're going through, because people can't see the things that you don't show them.
Good
and
point.
that resonates with me as well. You know, not only do we need people, and you know, not only do we sometimes lean on people, and then they could sometimes lean on us, mm-hmm. but we have to, it helps if we're honest and we tell people, you know, especially as you mature in life, you know, you just start to see that everyone's got a lot of other stuff going on. So it's not necessarily that, you know, your friends don't care. It's just that they might be busy and they might just not notice mm-hmm. what's happening. But if you have good people in your life and you tell them what's happening, they will, the people in your life that matter, they will accept it, and they'll just want what's best for you. And they'll help they'll help you in any way they can. And yeah, but you gotta let them, you gotta let them know what's happening. Mm-hmm. So yeah, not to keep it bottled up. So that song is just it.
That's great. Just,
I love it.
That's great. Yeah. No.
Song's racing through my head right now because I can't stop thinking about it. But yeah. You know what you said too is letting people know it's so important when you're ready to share it with somebody to share it, just so that they can be there for you. And if they can't, then it is what it is. But like if you don't share, then no one can be there to offer help and support. And when they are able to offer that, it's so much more rewarding and better, and gets a great message to send out there.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Ben, for sharing your story so openly with us today and just wanting to be an advocate and help us to fight this stigma.
Absolutely. It's been a pleasure. Thank you for giving me an avenue and a platform to do it. And maybe we could talk again in the future sometime.
I hope we do. I really do. Every night some rain must fall. Gotta learn to live and rise above it all. As hopeless as it seems, don't let anyone be stepping on your dreams. And keep it on the positive side. Get that love to